Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
Happy New Year, Derek.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, when you're listening to this, Happy New Year.
Yes.
This confuses us.
Yes.
Because we're actually recording before New Year's, but when this drops, it's after New Year's.
Because obviously we're not going to record it live New Year's morning.
Why not?
It was Wednesday.
It might be fun.
When's New Year's? Wednesday?
Oh my God, I'm so hammered.
I didn't even know that the day of the week New Year's is on.
New Year's Day is the Wednesday.
It's the Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not working that day.
Me neither. Oh, no, I am.
You're working New Year's Day?
No, New Year's Day, the day after. I'm on the second.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 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 I work that day, too.
Yeah, I just have Wednesday off, and I'm good. You know what I'm going to do on Wednesday?
What?
Nothing. Absolutely, positively, doodly do nothing.
You know, if we did hire a sound engineer, and we could probably just go live and move this show to Sirius XM.
Yeah, but it'd probably cost us money.
It would. Definitely would.
Could you imagine doing this every day?
No.
Why not? What are you saying, Derek?
There's no way we could come up with enough material.
We just make crap up.
Yeah, we could. We could. That we could. We could.
Derek paddled to Newfoundland on the weekend. From Toronto to Newfoundland and back on the weekend.
Absolutely.
Then he circumnavigated Australia. Fought three alligators and a great white shark.
Yeah, I broke a Guinness record.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Prove us wrong.
Exactly. What's new with you?
Well, Christmas.
Yes, yes, there's that.
Yeah, we actually, our last episode came out on Boxing Day. So,
yes.
The cats and the dog gave me zipper lubricant for my dry suit.
Oh, yes, for your dry suit.
Right, I got two of those. They look like chapstick.
Yeah.
So the next time somebody says, hey, you got any chapstick?
There you go.
Why, yes, I do. I have the zipper lubricant chapstick. Yeah. Put some of that on.
Zip those lips.
Zip the lip, baby.
Yeah,
so I got some of that. I'm just going to put it on my, I got to put that on the zipper of my dry suit to protect it.
Waterproof it, lubricate it.
Lubricate plastic, metal, or watertight zippers on wetsuits, dry suits, tents, soft coolers, and other gear. Also protects zippers from salt, chlorine, dirt, and corrosion. Mm-hmm. Reduces wear, long-lasting, silicone-free, protects. Clean zipper by removing all sand, dirt, and other debris.
That should be a given.
I would think so. Keep freshly treated zippers away from contact with sand and dirt.
How are you going to do that?
Well, it's not like you're going to lubricate your zippers and on your dry suit and then just go jump on a beach.
But no, but you're generally in turbid water if you're whitewater paddling or something, right? So there's spring runoff, there's a lot of dirt and turbidity.
I'm thinking they're talking like don't just go roll like a dog in the beach on a dead fish.
Yeah, don't suit up and unsuit the on a beach.
Right.
Rolling your suit in the sand.
Yeah. Do that in the driveway. I got that for Christmas to try those out. I got, for winter camping, a big comfy chair.
Oh. Like a fluffy chair?
That
like
has a big battery.
Oh, I was wondering what that was.
And it heats the chair.
Nice.
So I can be sitting there winter camping with a heated bod.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
That's cool.
My son got me that. This has been the year of chocolate.
Oh.
More chocolate than I can shake a stick at. And man, I can shake a stick. And speaking of sticks, I've got a bone to pick with you.
Do you?
That story last week about
The winning stick?
Winning stick of the year.
Yeah.
Ever since then.
You're getting ads.
I am getting ads. And, hey, you might like this Instagram account.
Yeah.
Follow this guy. Stick reviews.
Oh, you sent something to me. I never.
That's exactly what I sent you. Going, dude.
Why am I getting
what?
This?
Why am I getting all this all of a sudden? Because you wanted to talk about awesome sticks.
It was a hilarious story.
Yeah, it's not hilarious anymore because I'm getting nonstop stick reviews.
Why am I getting this?
Anyway, it's been the year of chocolate. I've had so much Lindt chocolate. I will never complain about it. If you have Lindt chocolate you don't want to eat, send it my way. I will gladly die of chocolate overdose. Every time I turn around, more Lindt chocolate. Hey, what's in that bag over there? Lindt chocolate. I love Lindt chocolate. I've eaten so much of it. It's bad for you, but I'm not going to stop. Other than that, I don't think I got anything else paddle related. I got money to go because I've been saying I need a new pair of suits that will go over my dry suit for winter paddling.
Yeah,
to make my feet a bit warmer. So I've got money to go towards a new pair of winter paddling booties.
Oh, okay.
To go over. So I got a couple $100.
Got to keep the toesies warm.
Yeah, I mean they're warm enough, but it's just. I got to get something that's easier to put on over a dry suit because I got those Astrals.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. What a pain in the arse. I think someone was a zipper or a something, too, right?
That Velcro.
Opens up and that Velcro
old
would be awesome.
Old man Velcro.
I need old guy Velcro because right now I am like one really temper tantrum away from like open-toed sandals.
Yeah.
And I will pull a big black sock over top my dry suit with a little suspender on top of my socks and put Birkenstocks on. That's how close I am. Oh, I'll be strutting down that. Yeah. I got some money to go towards towards those.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's got to be like a Velcro, as jokey as that is, because God, that'd be just open up the foot, put your foot in there, tighten it
Can't
up with a Velcro.
Yeah,
how sad is that, man? It's like this. Our first pair of shoes had Velcro. My last pair of shoes had Velcro. you come into the world in Velcro, and you go out of the world
exactly.
In Velcro.
Exactly.
Oh, it's bad. Yeah, that was about it. You got anything?
I predicted I was going to get fluffy slippers. I did. I got a down-filled slippers, camp slippers. So
excellent.
Nice and cozy. Nice and cozy and comfy. Got some other things. Some my niece got all crafty, and she made they're basically Werther's originals, but not Werther's original, but she made them herself.
Oh, that's cool.
And she made flavored salts. There's a basil something salt and a balsamic something salt, I think.
And so what was her inspiration for that?
I have no idea.
Okay. When we were in Iceland,
mm-hmm.
Blueberry salt.
Oh, yeah?
That was a thing.
Yeah.
And we bought it and brought some back.
Mm-hmm.
And we, that didn't last too long. But, it's not like we just saw her have a spoonful of salt.
And there's also, she made some homemade vanilla extract. So vanilla beans in a bottle, and she did it with I didn't know this. She said it's normally made with like a alcohol or alcohol mixture. That's then the alcohol is evaporated off, so you just have the
vanilla.
Extract. Yeah. And but she made hers with tequila, and the tequila is still in it.
Ooh.
So tequila. Vanilla. She said it's...
Canella.
She said it needs to sit for 30 to 60 days before it's used. So, interesting. Yeah,
can you just, like, do shots?
Vanilla shots.
Did she give you that much? Vanilla tequila shots?
It's probably about a half a cup full. It's in a weird bottle.
So, one shot is what you're saying.
It's a single shot.
Single shot, half cupper.
Yeah. And my other niece, she gave a... It's a thing that sits on your stove and it...
We call those pots. Pans.
But it comes with all kinds of spices and essential oils and...
A spice rack?
And whatever. No. You boil water and with all the spices and essential oils in it, and it makes your house smell nice.
Oh, like a potpourri sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
She did it herself. It's impressive. They went all crafty and made me feel guilty for not being crafty.
No, you actually spent all your money.
Yeah, it was, and then, you know, there's all the normal stuff. Oh, no, I can't talk about that.
But then there was, no.
But yeah, it was really, really good. So I got a bunch of, it's all a family gathering, right? So it was, a lot of people got together and the whole family did all crafty stuff. And so it was really neat.
That's cool though.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're doing sprouts.
Yes.
We got this sprout thing from my sister-in-law there.
I got my brother-in-law a sprout thing for Christmas.
Yeah. Now we got sprouts growing, alfalfa sprouts.
Yeah.
And they talk about all these things. Use sprouts instead of lettuce. So on my peanut butter and lettuce sandwich, I got to have peanut butter and sprouts? Yeah, I don't think that just doesn't have the same kick.
I assume you're joking, right?
No. Have you never had a peanut butter and lettuce sandwich?
No.
Peanut butter, lettuce, peanut butter, banana.
Oh, I've had peanut butter and banana. Right. I like that.
Peanut butter and lettuce. But it's got to be iceberg lettuce because you need that crunch.
But all it adds is a crunch because iceberg lettuce doesn't have a taste.
Oh, trust me. Trust me. It adds to your sandwich. Just a lot of peanut butter, a lot of lettuce, and it's good. It's tasty. Trust me. Go home and make one. I'll wait.
No.
Drive home right now. Make a sandwich.
I'm on it.
I'll wait.
Well, you know, I do make that, and I've had it a couple times over the Christmas break. It's a pickle and mustard sandwich. Dill pickle and mustard.
People used to do the cucumber sandwiches.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what they put on with it.
Salmon and cucumber. That's what I did a couple times too.
Yeah. I used to do peanut butter, bologna, brown sugar sandwiches.
Huh.
It actually tastes a lot better than it sounds, but you're not eating them every day.
Yeah.
Because nothing says nutritious.
You seem to combine a lot of stuff with peanut butter.
I'm one of those people that, you ever see that cooking show on TV? Let's go into their house. Whatever's in their kitchen, we're going to make them a gourmet meal.
Oh, yeah.
Peanut butter, bologna, and brown sugar sandwiches. 5-star Michelin restaurant at my house. I'll do that someday. I'll look in the fridge. Well, what do we got in the fridge that's been sitting here a while? That needs to be mixed together. And I did, I can't remember what, it had to be something pork, but we had a bunch of apples that had been sitting there, weren't getting eaten.
Mm-hmm.
I chopped all those up, threw them in a pan with some, a bit of water and sugar, brown sugar and that, and heated, fried them up till they were squishy, and then ate those on top of the pork.
That would be good.
Right?
That would be good.
I took Cointreau. Now, with me, anything I can set on fire while cooking is a is a plus plus in my book.
Yeah.
I did some rice, just steamed rice.
Yeah.
Put it in a pan, a big pan, like with high sides. Put Cointreau on top of it, mm-hmm. which tastes orange.
That's the orange stuff. Yeah.
Lit it on fire.
Hmm.
That's like the stuff they use for Orange Jubilee.
Yeah.
Or Cherry's Jubilee.
Jubilee.
And then all the alcohol burned off, and you ended up with this orange rice.
Caramelized and...
No, it wasn't caramelized. It just tasted orange rice.
It would singe a bit.
It was good.
Mm-hmm.
I got to set things on fire on purpose. Dry January. Are we doing dry January? And when I say we, I mean you.
No, I don't drink a lot as it is, so it's... I've done it a few times in the past just because me and my wife would be like, hey, let's not drink beer for this month, which is basically all we drink, right? And so I normally would come here on recording nights with a
Monster Energy drink or a de-alcoholized
beer. Yeah.
Or rum or scotch.
Last year we found quite a few, and there's a few that we ended up liking. There's a couple of microbrews in Toronto that make a really couple of nice beers. I can't remember their name off the top of my head, but we found a few. There's also a couple that
Guinness Zero was the best.
That actually,
out of
yeah,
all of them.
Guinness Zero was really good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if, because, you know, like, I will support you if you're doing it. I did not say I would do it. I just said I would support you. And if your wife thinks that you're doing it, Yes, we're doing it here too. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Yeah. Say no more. Say no more. That's a mighty fine looking Coca-Cola IPA you got there, my friend. Yeah. Any plans for 2025 in regards to trips?
Well, we are in the middle of planning the Algonquin spring trip, mid-May.
Don't know where you're going yet, or?
Yeah, we have narrowed it down to three different routes.
Yeah?
Mostly from the, they're all off of the west side of the park. So we'll
never go
that
to the east side, eh?
No, it's
a long trip.
The times that I have done the east side of the trip, east side of the park, it's usually running the Petawawa. So mm-hmm. we'll used to do that once every 2 years or so with a bunch of guys at work. But we kind of got out of that. A bunch of the guys retired, so they just don't do these trips anymore. So now it's, I'm with a new group from work and these guys are more into fishing and whatever, right?
Well, there's a lot of fish and stuff over there.
Yeah.
There's a couple of really, you want to talk to Raccoon, Randy Bourne?
Yeah. Well, I remember we did do the White Partridge trip there. Yeah.
Well,
they've covered that.
Yeah. They've covered that east side of the park. Mm-hmm. You invite him along and you'll be going fishing.
Yeah.
Mind you, he likes white trout and that a lot too. Mm-hmm. So that's what you need to do. You just go park your arses up there and just do a little toodly do around the lake for a week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be in May because I don't like bugs.
Oh, you and your bug fetish.
I know. No, it's an anti-fetish.
Anti-fetish.
But yeah, I'm excited. What about you? What are your big plans? Anything?
A lot of the stuff I think we're doing is just going to be short day stuff because our big one's going to be into Japan.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm actually, there's a lake I was looking at, and when you're paddling this lake, there's a full-on view of Mount Fuji right behind you.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I might go there. Up in Hokkaido, there's a couple of lakes. I'm hoping to get out onto the Sea of Japan in a kayak as well. So we'll see how much paddling we get done up there. But I'm hoping to do mm-hmm. a lot of paddling while we're there, too, with sightseeing and everything, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my daughter's actually got to work and save vacation. She's got friends coming. Another friend that's coming over in June, I think it is. Too.
Okay.
So can't, but I mean, we can do stuff ourselves as well.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But I think we're going to do some paddling while we're there. And then anything else is going to be a couple days here, a couple days there.
Yeah.
That sort of deal. Nothing too big because we got to take time off for spring shows and stuff like that. Too,
okay. Right? Yeah.
Which we'll talk about a little later. So, but got a few things where, like I say, you know, there's people, oh, yeah, we go for 3 days, leave Friday, come back Sunday. Okay, that's not too bad. They're not too far, you know, we're not driving for 18 hours, paddle in somewhere, make camp, and stay one day and then paddle out the next.
6 hours on a highway, 3 hours on a dirt road, logging road.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see. But, I think there's going to be a lot of day tripping this year.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, or a lot of overnighter stuff. You know, drive up somewhere, paddle a couple spots along the way, find a hotel to stay in or a cheap campground or something.
Yeah.
Paddle a couple spots on the way home the next day.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Sort of like we did the 12 Great Lakes in a day.
Oh, yes.
So you stop somewhere and you paddle, then you drive and you paddle.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, they wouldn't be that many.
Yeah.
Wouldn't do that in just a day.
But exactly.
You could hit a couple of small spots you'd like to check out.
There's a couple spots that I'd like to. I've always, on the Highway 7 going to Ottawa,
mm-hmm.
there's a couple spots where there's these long finger lakes or creeks on the long side of the highway. It's like, I've always wanted to paddle that.
Jump into there.
Mm-hmm.
Park and jump in and go for a paddle to see where they go.
Yeah.
That's like up in Washago.
Yeah.
Before the 169
joins
the... Yeah. Like, up through there. I know Kevin Callan's paddled that way. I think he's the only guy I know that's paddled up there.
Oh, yeah?
But paddling the rivers through there, you're always driving... We always drive by heading north.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I've never actually stopped and actually paddled here.
Yeah.
So that might be a, hey, let's go up paddling for a day thing. You know, you leave early in the morning so that you're on the water by daylight. And then you're off by end of day.
The Big East is a nice trip.
See? I don't mind traveling if I'm leaving at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
You drive for 3 hours Then you paddle for 10.
Yeah.
And then you drive home for 3.
Yeah.
Right? That's only 16 hours of your day.
Yeah.
That's what you do on a regular day anyway, like when you're working.
True.
Right? Yeah. So a 16-hour day really is totally squat.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're wasting, I mean, you're using all your daylight. I've done that before where I go on a camping or I'm going out for a day trip and I'm on the water the minute that sun's coming up.
Oh, okay.
Right? And then like I'm tying my canoe up and I'm done tying just as it's too dark to, like I need to be putting my headlamp on to see those final knots.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's like perfect timing. You've used every bit of daylight that you can on a paddling day, and then you paddle or you drive home, easy peasy. Grab a coffee, a couple of donuts, a burger, whatever, snacks, and you eat the rest of your trail mix or whatever that you brought for the day, right? And then you're good to go.
It's funny, you own up the 11. There's a bunch of people. They did this northern, we had this community outreach thing with northern schools recently, and the group of three went up, and they all stopped at Weber's. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about, this is a really nice burger place. And I'm looking at them, the way they said it, it's like, you didn't know what Weber's was before? No, why?
Oh, don't go in the summer. You park across the road, the southbound people.
They put in an overpass for people to walk across.
So that you can go across and stand in line for an hour.
Yeah.
I don't care how good your burger is. I am not standing in line for an hour for a burger.
I've never stopped when there's a lineup. If I see a line, I just, get back on the highway. But I've stopped a few times. I like the Weber's burgers. And so it's just, but it was funny. I asked as they did a presentation from their northern trip, they talked about Weber's. And I kind of, the way they said it, it's like, you never heard of Weber's? And then I talked to the whole group. Who here knows what Weber's is? Nobody knew.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess you got to be a canoeer or something.
Well, dude, I first moved to the Toronto area and I started meeting people, there are things. Oh, yeah, we've been up north. Mm. Where? Barrie. Barrie is not north.
That's not north.
Barrie
is not even near north.
No, that's like an hour from here. Like, I ride my bike there. Yeah, you know, like, you have never been north.
You can tell when you're in the north because the difference in the way people call where they're staying. We're going to the cottage, that's not north.
Right.
Going to the cabin, going to the camp, that's north.
Yep.
Yeah.
One of our graphics guys, he's got a map of Canada in his office. And there's times where I've talked about Moosonee and James Bay.
Yeah.
And I've had his, let's go see Gord's office. And we'll walk there and I'll point all these places I've talked about up north. And like, you go there? Dude, it's not that.
It's really not that far.
And when you start looking at the... No, I mean, it's really not. You know, Temagami, you drive to Temagami in a day?
Absolutely.
And then you show them, okay, I go to Sault Ste. Marie and up to Wawa in a day. Mm-hmm. And they're just dumbfounded.
Yeah.
Like, Ontario, you can drive for 24 hours and still be in Ontario.
I've done that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my goodness, how big is this province?
Right? Well, we drove, when we went to Woodland Caribou, we drove 24 hours straight.
Yeah.
And it's like,
And you think
and we weren't in Manitoba yet.
Yeah. You talk to people from Europe and it's like 24 hours. I could cross most of Europe in 24 hours. I could be in 18 countries.
Well, we have friends in Germany and they go, oh yeah, we're going down to Italy for a tournament, a hockey tournament.
Yeah.
You're going to Italy for a hockey. And then you start looking the map and you're like, and doing the mile. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's like us going to North Bay, whatever. Yeah, but the roads are different. Whatever. You got the Autobahn.
I was at an Airbnb in Canmore, Alberta once. And there was this young couple that were there. They were in visiting. They'd flown into Calgary, rented a car. They were doing hikes. And then they asked a question. They said, yeah, would you like to drive and check out Toronto? What would that drive be like? Everybody in the room kind of turned. We all glanced at each other and says, and explain it to them. They go, oh.
Right?
Yeah, you're crossing most of Canada to get to Toronto. You're not, this is not a drive for you.
And that's why we don't know Mike from Canmore. So, you know, like I say, I think there's going to be a lot of day tripping and stuff like that. So maybe not so much overnight camping and stuff. Unless, like I say, it's a drive, then paddle all day, camp, and then paddle all day.
Yes.
Or drive and camp, drive and paddle, camp, drive and paddle.
That'd be nice.
That sort of thing.
And what's nice,
I mean, that's something we could do down toward down the States as well, right?
Exactly.
Go over the border, because the border is only an hour and a half from here.
And the fall trip that I did with the boys recently from work, we went up into a lot of these old logging roads on Crownland, and you can drive just a couple kilometers and find a whole new lake system.
Yeah.
And so it's like you could wander through so many lakes up there. You could either base camp or you could just drive and paddle, drive and paddle, drive and paddle.
Yeah.
There's a lot of area to check out, because there's the logging roads just squirrel through everything up there.
You can pee where no one's peed before.
You could. You truly could.
You really could.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Space. 5-year mission to pee where nobody's peed before. Other than that, that's about it. Bunch of small trips and then Japan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See what happens in Japan.
Sounds exciting.
You have a holy cow canoe, don't you?
I do have a holy cow canoe.
What do you think of it?
14-foot holy. It's nice. I've actually, Johnny's Boat Shop just refurbished it for me, as we talked about last winter. He did a fantastic job.
Did you treat your canoes like poo-poo?
Yeah, I'm a little rough. I'm going to be a little bit more careful with it now, because at the time I was being rough with it, and then I took it on the meanest link, and I wasn't too concerned about it, so I bashed it around a lot, and I wasn't too concerned because I was going to buy a new canoe. And then COVID happened, and the price of canoes went through the roof. Used canoes are just as expensive as new canoes. And so it's like, oh, well, I guess I'll just spend $1,000 and fix this one up. So now I'm committed to, I've had it restored. Johnny's Boat Shop did a really good job. And it's 42 pounds, and it's a 14-footer, two-seat 14-footer. I've taken the whole family in that thing. Like, I've loaded it so heavy, and it takes everything, and for a 14-footer, carries a lot of stuff.
You need to trade that in for a 17-footer.
I do. I need a 3-seater, something that I can have 3 seats in, and then when the kids start paddling on their own, take the 3rd seat out, and then I have 2 canoes again to do, you know, 2 people in each canoe.
You need somebody needs to make a canoe that you can stretch and...
I know.
And push back down to from 15 to 17.
Yeah.
Right? That'd be awesome. So I came across an article about holy cow canoes.
Did you?
Yeah, and I stopped to read because I know, and I think you're the only one I know that has a holy cow canoe. I mean, everything I own is Swift.
It's
everything Kevin Callan owns is Novacraft.
So I think they've supplied a bunch of canoes to the Canadian military and Cubs and Scouts organizations. But yeah, you're right. You don't often come across people out and about that are paddling holy cow canoe. So it's,
I didn't realize how long they've been around either.
So, but when they first formed, it was different owners, right? Mm-hmm. And then these boys took over.
Yeah. So Holy Cow Canoe Companies in Guelph manufactures lightweight recreational canoes, kayaks, advanced new age composite materials such as ultra glass Kevlar, carbon Kevlar for added strength and durability while remaining very lightweight, which is what everybody wants these days, right? Mm-hmm. I am so done with fiberglass canoes, but... So the owner says, when we first started building lightweight composites, people would come in, see the canoes, lift them up, and the first thing they would say is, holy cow. I could not believe how light they were.
Yeah.
So I guess that's where they got the name. Mm-hmm. Is it Ghulam Balak? I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Ghulam Balak.
Founded as Trent Canoes in 1978. I would have been 10.
Yeah, me too.
Then it was purchased over 2 decades ago. The craft of canoe building is supported and kept alive by years of experience. Originally, we did build cedar strip canoes, but we don't do it anymore. The quality of the cedar is just not the same as it used to be.
So, I agree with them. I've seen that myself because I never did finish, but I have bought cedar, so I sourced some stuff from out west.
Mm-hmm.
But these days, So if you have fast-growing cedar, it has fat growth rings, so it's a weaker cedar. It's not as structural. Whereas if you have a cedar tree that has grown with narrow rings because it has canopy cover, and so it's taken 100 years to grow and instead of 15 years, then you're going to have tighter rings. It's going to be – well, I've seen some pine and some cedar in the past where the rings are so tight that it's like – it's hard like oak.
Mm-hmm.
And but super light,
right?
Whereas oak is heavy, and so it's cedar is different these days. It's a lot of it's really rapidly fast grown, and people are finding that also with a lot of these Brazilian teak farms, and so they grow the teak so fast that it's teak is known for weathering. You know, you use it for gunnels and ash for gunnels, but yeah, it's known for being tough and weather resistant.
Furniture,
yep. But in these days with some of these teak farms, the teak has lots of sun, grows really fast, so it's not as dense, not as hard as it used to be.
Yeah. Today we strictly make canoes with fiberglass and composite materials. We have two here that are made of Kevlar, a ballistics-grade material, not that you would shoot bullets at it. I would be tempted, because I know Mike Burns has talked about doing the skin-on frames with different types of the Kevlar.
Yes.
And he says it's better with the ballistic Kevlar. And I'm thinking, I would just be tempted if I was doing that.
You need 300-plus layers to stop a bullet.
I just want to take a shot at it. He says, but I have actually personally pulled out small-caliber rounds out of the side of some canoes, and they didn't get through. So it's amazingly strong stuff.
Hmm.
That doesn't mean to go start shooting at your canoe. Holy Cow Canoe Company offers a number of versatile designs suitable for first-time paddlers seeking a safe, stable, easy paddling craft to enjoy with family, to advanced paddlers who would seek a sleeker craft for speed and efficiency in the water. We are a smaller shop that offers family recreational canoes that are lightweight and composite builds. They are stable design, very easy to paddle. We don't build anything specifically designed for racing or for extreme white water. And see, my thing is, like I say, I talk about Swift canoes a lot because everything I've bought from them I've enjoyed. Kevin Callan always talks Novacraft because that's what he's likes. You've got your Holy Cow.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of other companies out there selling them. And my thing is, go to shows like the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show or Canucopia, something like that, and check out the different brands as well. Winona.
Mm-hmm.
You know, check out the brands. And if you get the chance to try them, try it before you buy it if you can, especially when it comes to boats. Because I've been in a couple of boats that I've thought about buying, and I'm really glad I didn't.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They just did not feel right, right? But yeah, when it comes to this, and if they're they may be a smaller shop, but if they sell a variety of them to all skill levels, then you might find one that you prefer, right? What does it take to be a master canoe builder today? He says, I actually began doing this by accident. Originally, when I started, I was working as a salesperson. I realized that I enjoyed it and the fantastic people would come in. But this isn't my field of study, which is business. I worked in Toronto. I would hop on the subway, go downtown every day, but I was miserable. He just described 90% of the people in Toronto. When Balak noticed he had a job posting at a canoe shop, he jumped at the opportunity. I thought, I'll try it. At least it's something different. I soon found out that I really, really liked it. I'm a firm believer that if you actually enjoy what you do, you will naturally do a better job at it. That's what everybody says. You know what? Do something that you enjoy doing.
Yes.
Get a career in something that you're going to enjoy. Building canoes soon became his passion. I love the engineering aspect of it. Composites are up and coming. For example, 30 years ago, if you were going to build a plane out of fabric and resin, people would have probably looked at you like you were nuts. Now there are aircraft out there made completely out of fabric and resin.
Mm-hmm.
Engineering aspect really intrigues me because different materials have different properties. Kevlar material is designed to remain flexible so it can absorb impact rather than resist it. Canoeist himself, Balak says the busiest time of the year is, of course, during prime paddling season in the warmer months. The current time is the quietest. What I enjoy about it is that I'm free to experiment, especially in the winter time. Working with emerging technology, I get to try different processes. With Kevlar and composite boats, he says the process is actually part engineering and part art form. Overall, you do have to consider all variables because you never know how people are going to use the canoe. Especially Derek. Uses it like a caveman with a club.
Yep.
Typically, a canoe could take about 2 to 4 days to build, which realistically isn't that long.
No, it's not. But if you have learned the process and you're, you know, there's a gentleman at work that I've worked short time with. He just retired, but I think he said it was, he got two molds. One is he doesn't know the brand, but one is a Swift canoe mold.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already starting building Kevlar canoes in his retirement years.
Yeah.
So
yeah, if you can figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And again, if you're not a large production shop either, makes it easier.
Yes.
You're not trying to pump out 300 boats a week.
Yeah.
Right? It depends on how many people are working on it. Some of that is curing time because you have to wait for certain things to set in before you can move it on to the next level. In total, we have 4 people who build here. Holy Cow Canoe Company has supplied canoes for various organizations, including Canadian Armed Forces, church groups, provincial private rental programs and facilities, schools, charity functions, youth groups, scouts, guides, and various adventures groups. Clients are from all over. We ask a lot of questions when people come in. Where will they use it? How much weight are you going to put in it? We try to ensure that if you're looking for something specific, then we want to make sure it's the correct boat for what you plan on doing. For Balak, it's also about building memories for those with a keen interest on being on the open water. They're interested, and I love it because I can show them the shop and how canoes are built, he says. They come in with an open mind and enjoy being out in nature, and they have deep appreciation for the outdoors.
Hmm.
See, that's the kind of love that went into your boat that
beat
the living crap out of.
But hey, I'm rough on it, but I think I bought it in like 2004.
So 20 years ago that you've beaten the living crap out of it.
I can't remember what year I bought it, but it was around 04, 05. So I've had it for about 20 years. So
I think you should go buy a new one from him. I really do. You seem to like it.
Can't afford a new one right now.
Sell one of the kids. Sell both the kids. Get rid of the cats.
If I sell the kids, I won't need a new canoe.
Fair point. Well played. Hey, I'm just a suggestion guy. I'm a problem solver, not a problem maker. Work with me, Derek.
Yeah.
Work with me here.
Absolutely.
New Jersey. Let's talk about New Jersey.
Okay.
New Jersey firefighters had to get creative in the latest rescue. The Franklin Lakes Volunteer Fire Department responded to a dog needing rescue on December 22nd. Canine had fallen through the ice over Shadow Lake and was struggling to escape the frigid water. Seen a few of those this year. Not as many as previous years. But every year you see a lot of videos of dogs and that going through water. And people scurrying out and sliding across.
Because the dogs don't really know any better.
Yeah.
They have this novel thing where this, hey, the water's hard.
Yeah, I take my dog down by the river and it's like I just got to keep calling her back because she sees the river, but she doesn't understand one slip and she can go in and right under
the ice.
Ice.
Yeah.
Right, because there's open spots with current.
And then she's pooched.
According to a post on the fire department's Instagram, the pet managed to swim to a nearby island roughly 75 feet offshore where the dog became stranded. The volunteer fire department added that Assistant Chief Piccoli arrived on... You giggle because all you're thinking is Spicoli.
Spicoli. He's an S in front of his name.
Yeah. Arrived on the scene minutes after the call about the dog came in. Shortly afterwards, rescue crews arrived, dressed in ice gear and prepared to fetch the dog. The assembled team of dog rescuers also commandeered a nearby homeowner's canoe.
There you go.
Now, see, if that was me, I would probably be already be out there in the boat with my dry suit on.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I have a like ropes and stuff
connected then they'd to the canoe. And then they'd be rescuing you.
Yeah, but to make it more worth their while, right? Two for the price of one. And yeah. The boat's already out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I did half their job for them, so don't yell at me. With some teamwork, the few treats to win the dog's trust, firefighters were able to leash the pup and bring him back to safety on the shore. And photos from the fire department show two volunteers in bright yellow, full body suits, red helmets, scooting themselves and the canoe across the ice to reach the dog. Another photo show the firefighters on their stomachs with one person breaking through the ice and the other gripping the side of the canoe. This hard work led to success. The fire department also posted a photo of the stranded dog safely tucked in the canoe and heading home.
Perfect.
So go to the Franklin Lakes Volunteer Fire Department Instagram for pics.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's pretty cool that, I mean, yeah, some there, you made the comment earlier to before we came online. People are going to go, what a waste of taxpayers' money saving a dog.
But you know what? They saved a dog.
It's
was
good training.
The firefighter's being paid anyways.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be a good training event. It's like, hey, we get to actually use our skills in real time without the risk of a human life being on the line.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so good on them.
Yeah.
Someplace a little warmer, which when I see things like this at this time of year, I got to remember the Southern Hemisphere is different.
Yes, yeah, I know. You got to wrap your brain around that. Hey, yeah. Wait a sec.
It's their summer. It's our winter. Because all of a sudden it says, the Marine and Safety Tasmania, MAST for short, has put out a message for all boaters. The post-Christmas period from Boxing Day to the end of January marks the busiest time on Tasmania's waterways. That's on the, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, right. It's their summer.
Yeah.
They have Christmas in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
For boating enthusiasts across the state, it's the most popular time to get out on the water. Over the holiday period, the family boat is taken out of storage, hitched to the car, brought to favorite spots. Shacks and caravan parks come alive. And see, that would be cottages and campgrounds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Shacks and caravan parks come alive with activity as families gather, eager to cast a line, set a pot, or simply enjoy a relaxing day on the water. That would also be smoke pot, not set a pot. While this time of year is filled with excitement, Marine and Safety Tasmania reminds everyone that safety should always come first. And since we do have a lot of listeners in Australian area, life jackets and safety equipment. It's encouraging to know that 95% of Tasmanians wear life jackets every time they head out on the water.
That's impressive.
I don't think there's anywhere in North America that could boast that.
No, absolutely not.
I don't think there's anywhere that has that kind of...
And I think it just comes down to it's a cultural thing. Everybody thinks that, like, for example, when people started wearing ski helmets for skiing or snowboarding, everybody's a nerd. And now it's so common. It's like, yeah. I love wearing a helmet when I'm skiing. Keeps my head warm, for one, and stops me from cracking my skull open like an egg on the ski hills, for two.
Right? You should wear one all the time.
I should.
Yeah.
I
the number of concussions you've had,
I know.
you should be wearing a helmet at all times. Recent reports from the Marine Police highlight areas for improvement. The most common safety issues include inflatable life jackets that haven't been properly serviced.
Yeah.
Outdated safety equipment such as expired flares. These oversights can have serious consequences. Before you launch, take a moment to thoroughly check all safety equipment, ensure your life jacket is in good condition and fits correctly, and most importantly, always wear it.
There you go.
Courtesy at boat ramps. I mean, we talk about portage etiquette.
Yep.
And, like, this is a big thing as well, because you see people with their boats, and then sometimes you're trying to get your kayak in there at the same time.
Yeah, you
and
get...
people blocking everything, and... Summer is the busiest time at boat ramps with parked cars and long queues. A little patience and preparation can make a big difference. Prepare your boat away from the main launching area to minimize delays for others. Show respect and lend a hand when you see someone struggling. Courtesy goes a long way. By following these simple steps, we can ensure safe, efficient, and enjoyable access to the water for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I've seen people at put-ins and takeouts that are just like, give your head a shake.
Yeah.
You see people that they're putting their packs on and stuff like that at a portage, and they start walking away, leaving all their canoes and everything blocking. And there's people waiting just offshore for their turn to come in.
It's like, dude.
So you're going to walk the 800 or whatever meters to the far end of the portage, drop your stuff, come all the way back for your second load, and leave these people sitting here.
Yeah.
Not happening.
Yeah,
I will either say something or I will move.
I have people's boats before.
Stuff before, yeah. Paddle safely. The summer holidays often bring new paddlers keen to try their Christmas kayaks and paddle boards, right? 'Tis the season. If you're one of them, keep these tips in mind. Know your limits. Paddling with the wind is easy, but coming back against it can be challenging. Stay visible by carrying a white strobe or all-around light, especially during early mornings or at dusk. Use a tether if paddling more than 200 meters offshore, and wear a life jacket.
Hmm.
Always check the weather. As a final reminder before heading out, always check the weather forecast. If there's any doubt about conditions, it's safer to stay ashore. How many stories did we hear that read this year about people being blown out to sea?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And being lost for hours and having some ship drive by and rescue them.
Yeah.
Some private boat going, what are you guys doing way out here? We're blown out to sea and we can't get back.
Yeah.
All right, we'll jump in.
Yeah.
But you're not getting your paddle boards back.
I've seen one where there's this deep sea fishing charter. They're out there catching whatever. And suddenly they look over and they're like five, 10 kilometers away from shore.
Yeah.
There's a guy on a white swan, inflatable swan.
He was fishing.
He was. Yeah. Yes, he was.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you're a long way from shore.
Yeah. That is not the boat you want to be catching big fish in, because you're going where they're going out to sea. By planning ahead, showing courtesy, and prioritizing safety, we can all enjoy Tasmania's beautiful waterways this summer. Let's make it a season to remember for all the right reasons. If you're down, going to be paddling Tasmania, visit the MAST website at mast.tas.gov.au for more information on safe boating. And if you have any questions, you'll be able to send them a question if you're not too sure. Because that's what I've been noticing about a lot of things is there's things some countries do that I wouldn't even think would be A, legal, or B, illegal.
Yeah.
Let's talk about South Korea, for instance. How is that for a segue? Hey?
You're getting better at it.
I'm getting better.
You still need more practice.
Kayaking while under the influence of alcohol will be banned in South Korea from starting June 2025.
But not now.
Who knew?
So you can drink and kayak until June.
I can go over there and get absolutely hammered, jump in a kayak. Not a problem. Yeah. Over here, however, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Make sure you know what's what. According to the Korean Coast Guard, the revised law of water-related leisure activities will come into force June 21st next year to prohibit drunk people from riding water leisure crafts such as surfboards and kayaks. Currently, the rules only apply to motorized craft like jet skis. So if you're on a jet ski, keep on riding, pal. You're not getting my beer.
Yeah.
Under the new rule, a person who is found to have paddled a kayak while drunk, a blood alcohol content of 0.03% or higher.
So that's a 0.03 is like, what is that? 0.1 to 0.3 is a warning. 0.3 to 0.8 is a suspension. Above 0.8, it's like you're charged criminally.
Yeah, you know,
That's for vehicles.
I don't even pay attention to that anymore because I just don't drive under the
influence. Yeah, you just don't do it.
You will be subjected to a fine of up to 1 million won.
I was supposed to Google that.
Or 676 US. I Googled for you. I done did the Googling for you. I'm a Googling fool.
So 676, that's probably just over $1,000 Canadian.
676 US.
Yeah.
That's a good fine. Those who refuse a sobriety test can also be fined. So if you refuse, you get fined.
If you
1 million won,
yeah.
And then if they find out you did, there's another million.
Yeah.
So you're getting screwed either way,
yeah,
buddy.
You might as well blow. Yeah.
Just do it. The Coast Guard pushed for the revision amid a rise in accidents involving drunk paddlers and surfers. With a revision of the law, we will continue to identify unreasonable rules with regard to public safety and strengthen penalties realistically, Kim Jong-wook, head of Korean Coast Guard, says. Experts say drinking alcohol before surfing or kayaking could increase the risk of accidents as it numbs the senses and negatively affects the rider's judgment and reaction time.
Too true.
Could you imagine having a few beers and some shots of tequila or something down at while you're barbecuing, and when you're done, I'm going to go out for a surf. You grab your surfboard, you go hit the big waves.
Yeah.
It's hard enough trying to stand up and keep your balance.
Oh, I know.
Sober.
Yeah.
Does the alcohol wobbling counter effect the sober wobbling and you make out like a pro?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so. So this is, you asked me the question, wait, how many other countries allow drunk paddling?
Yeah.
I don't think they actually allow it.
It's just not illegal yet.
It just hasn't been made.
Yeah. It's just like everything. Rules are for the lowest common denominator, the people who make mistakes. So, you know, once upon a time, it wasn't illegal to, drink and drive, but obviously enough people died, and so they made it illegal. And
right.
So this is one of those things where enough people are getting out there on watercraft in South Korea, and it's like it's becoming a problem. And I can kind of see, I joked earlier, it's like, why not just make it illegal now? So I guess by making it June and dispersing it out amongst the public, what you can do is you can reach people so that, hey, we gave a grace period. You have 6 months to get used to this new rule. And so it allows enough people to learn about the new rule.
So anywhere between now and then, you might get a warning saying, hey,
come June.
This is things a million are gonna change, baby.
Yeah.
But yeah. this is what I was saying. It's like making sure you know. You know, some of the things that you take for granted here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is the completely other. Yeah, somebody from South Korea coming here. Ah, sure, we do it at home.
Not here, you don't.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was a thing.
Well, you wouldn't think that it's not already a rule. You'd think this would just be common sense. It's like, no, you're going to be charged.
Mind you, there's still people I know that will go out and, you know, they're going out paddling for the day, and they'll moor all their boats in the water and have their lunch, and somebody's pulling out a beer.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
It's probably encouraged in Russia.
I don't know. They probably don't drink beer out there.
No, it'd be vodka.
Yeah, they probably got their own. Is that water in your water bowl? Yes.
Sure.
Yes, it is.
yes, comrade. Yes,
it's my water bottle. Hey, look at him with his water bottle.
Sergei's got a nice big water bottle.
Yeah. It's the new year, and with the new year comes outdoor shows,
yeah.
Spring outdoor shows, starting actually this month. At the end of this month, there's a new one, the Hamilton Adventure Expo. Last I saw,
I haven't heard of this one before.
It's brand spanking new.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. Last I saw, online advance tickets are 80% sold out.
Oh, wow.
So they're, are you going to go?
I think I will. Yeah.
So maybe we should buy a couple of tickets and go and check it out. I was planning on going to check it out. It's the Ancaster Fairgrounds near Hamilton, Ontario here. January 25th Tickets are $15 in advance online or $20 at the door. So if you and a couple buddies are going, you can save yourselves $5 a piece by buying them early. HamiltonAdventureExpo.com. There's a few speakers that we know that are going to be there, a couple we don't know. Sounds like there's going to be a lot of stuff, but it's first year, so there'll be some growing pains and stuff and some things they'll figure out. But yeah, I think I'm going to go check that one out and see what it's all about.
Well, it's what's interesting is that they're going to be covering people off on the Golden Horseshoe area, because normally you'd have to travel to Toronto or to other locations. And so I think somebody obviously must have felt that there's a need for it in the Hamilton area and down deep into the Golden Horseshoe. So I guess it makes sense that they expand that way. It's a large population base. So it'll be interesting. It's for the first off. I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show is a month later, February 21st to 23rd at the International Center. Tickets are $17 plus tax advance, or you get a weekend pass for $20 plus tax.
Well, you might as well just buy the weekend pass in case you go twice.
In case you go 2 days, right? Outdooradventureshow.ca. I've spoken there the last, I think, 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Might be speaking there again this year. I'm not sure. But we definitely go down 1 to 2 days, depending what's going on, who's speaking and stuff like that. So I know you usually go down for 1 day.
Yeah.
I usually head down for 2 days. We'll see what's happening. Quiet Adventure Symposium. We go down to that one in East Lansing, Michigan. The MSU Pavilion, March 1st this year.
The Rabbit Show.
The Rabbit Show next door. We'll have our booth set up and recording live. Well, not really.
Well, we'll be recording there, but
we'll be recording
there.
We're
not going to be airing live.
Yeah, we'll be recording live. We won't be airing it live.
Yes, there we go.
We should set up a Facebook Live thing or something with a couple of.
I wonder how that would work. Them.
Oh, see, Ariana needed to be here for this. She didn't sit there with the camera and,
exactly. do that.
But no, she decided she's going to pack up and move to Japan. like I say, Quiet Adventure Symposium. Tickets are $13 in advance on the website or $20 at the door. So save yourself $7. There's also kids' prices, students' prices, and stuff like that.
It's a great location.
It really is.
I love going there. The organizers are awesome people. There's always... Well,
there's some bike stuff as well.
Yes.
Like paddling. But anything.
So they changed... Yeah, exactly. So it used to be the Quiet Water Symposium, and they felt that they were... There's enough vendors and people displaying stuff,
hikers
and
bicycles
and axe making people, and so they changed.
I'm going to say axe murderers.
Yes, but so it makes more sense to be Quiet Adventure, the QAS now.
Yeah,
but it's
there's a lot of paddling stuff there.
The pavilion there is amazing. It's got lots of parking. I love going there every year.
Mm-hmm. QuietAdventures.org for more information. Then there's the biggie, Canoocopia, Madison, Wisconsin, at the Alliant Energy Center, March 7th till 9th. Tickets are $16 per day or $32 for a weekend pass. So if you can get in there, if you want to go Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right, then you
spend
$32.
And if you're traveling from here to go down, then it makes sense to make a weekend of it.
Yeah. For more information, rutabaga.com. And the last one we've got here, Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, the Nepean, Ontario, Nepean Sportsplex, April 26th, 27th, free admission, free parking, which is always good prices for both.
Yeah, I've always marveled at that.
Yep. It's not been one of the higher attended shows.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people there, but not as many as I would expect.
Yeah.
You know, especially it's covering all that area around
Ottawa. Is a highly populated area. You think it'd be pretty busy, but
yeah. Anyway, adventureottawa.ca for more information. The Hamilton one we're going to check out. Toronto Door Show we're going to check out. Quiet Adventure Symposium we're going to check out. The Ottawa one might get up there. Not sure yet. Canoocopia, I don't think I'm heading to that one.
Yeah, sure. I've never been to it.
There was a plan to go to that until Japan happened.
Exactly.
Japan's just... My excuse for everything. I'm just going to say, Japan. So, you want to go on a trip? Japan.
Yeah.
That's just my answer. I'm not going to say no anymore. I'm just going to say Japan. hey, here's something I got to buy, Japan.
So if there's anybody out there that would like us to mention their outdoor show, outdoor event, spring show, just reach out to us and let us know if you want us to talk about your event, and we'll air it and push it out to people.
Yeah, in the meantime, we're going to South Korea to get some drinking paddling in
before it's too before it feels legal.
Before they make it illegal. just want to wish everybody a happy new year.
Yes.
To all our listeners. And again, thank you for listening. Because it's going to be like 9 years come February.
It's, yeah.
9 years, 10 years, 9 years. Yep. 9 years, yeah. Come February.
Ouch, that's a long time.
Wow, that's a lot of beer. A lot of beer. I would like to say, though, that it's been more good beers than bad beers.
Yeah. There's been a few bad here and there, but for the most part.
Yeah, especially when you panic.
Yeah. Hey, that's a nice label.
That's a nice label. Buy those.
What was it? It was alcohol-free, gluten-free, kosher, and there's
light.
And light.
Beer.
Yeah, it was a German beer. But it was
that
like,
had no right being made at all.
What are we drinking?
Yeah. Gluten-free, vegetarian or something. Yeah. Nobody knows.
That was funny.
Again, happy new year to everybody. Thank you for listening this year. I hope everybody has a great 2025. Get lots paddling in and lots of great adventures. And remember, adventures don't need to be that far away from home, and they don't need to be take a long time.
Yeah, even small trips can be epic.
Yep. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can download or stream all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.